When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured, not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
You're a growing business, which means you need every spare hour you can find. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
Hello, Catherine.
Hello, Dominic. How are you this morning?
I'm good. It's not morning time for me. It's almost dinner time. It's early bird special time here in the UK.
Well, that just sounds delicious.
Yep. Too early for me.
Can you believe we've gone through season one already?
I know. Honestly, it just flew by.
Well, shall we dive in?
We absolutely should. Today's episode, at long last, we are dealing with the finale of season one. Season one, episode 13, entitled Morning Star. The air date was April 5th, 2016, written by Pete Binswanger, one of our absolute favorites, directed by another one of our favorites, J. Miles Dale.
And here we are in season one, episode 13, Morning Star. The hunt is on. Jace, who is still reeling from everything that happened, makes hunting down Valentine his number one priority, even though he continues to wrestle with his conflicted feelings. In hopes of finding a way to stop Valentine before it's too late, Clary and Simon must find the key to unlocking Jocelyn's coma. But that key to unlocking Jocelyn's spell may just undo the Downworlder peace treaty, Simon's relationship with Raphael, and the vampire clan in the process. Ooh, high stakes. Forgive my pun.
High stakes. Interestingly, like, this is the highest stakes that we've dealt with in season one. And you're like, where do you go from here? And then we come back with season two and we're like, we'll show you. It gets much worse.
We'll show you.
Fun facts about episode 13, season one, the finale. Shooting ran from September 30th to October 9th, 2015. Reshoots for the season were filmed after this. Did I have any reshoots? I don't think so. Or did we?
We did. We added like four scenes at the end that were throughout the season. And I don't know.
What?
I don't know if you had any more than just pickup shots, but I know I had a whole scene with Emerald that was added into like episode five or something. And
wow.
Em and Matt had a couple scenes, and it was at the end of season one. We had to sort of revisit a bunch of stuff because they had the whole season by then, and they went, oh, wait, this piece of story is missing, and we want to connect this relationship a little bit more, and we have five extra minutes in this episode, and it all kind of just wove together beautifully.
Wow, I had no idea. Morningstar is a reference to the meaning of German translation of Clary and Valentine's last names, Morgan Stern. Morgan meaning morning and Stern meaning star. This family has associated its meaning to the Bible verse Isaiah 14:12, which states, "How art thou fallen from heaven, O Lucifer, son of the morning? How art thou cut down to the ground, which didst weaken the nations?" I don't know if I got that right. I hope I did. The verse directly refers That's to close. Lucifer, the fallen angel.
Indeed it does. More on that in season three.
Clary says that Camille lives in Alucard Apartments. Alucard mm-hmm. is Dracula yeah. spelled backwards. No way.
How did we not notice this?
Not a clue.
It's been three wow. seasons. How did we Pete, not clock that?
I can imagine I Pete know. Just sitting in the writer's room like, this is my fun little vampire thing I'm going to put in there. Yeah. How funny. Wow. Well, just completely
Pete,
missed it.
You got us.
He did.
Yeah.
He surely did.
You had the best
Kat, list. Is there any book to screen stuff we can talk about?
No, there's actually some really interesting ones in this episode. I don't know if you got this far in the books, Dom, but there actually is a boat that Valentine has, his sort of Ark of the Unholy Covenant, as it were, that that is in the second book.
Interesting.
Or I don't know if it's it's Valentine's boat, and then I think we take it over at some point. I can't remember. There's a boat, but it's in book two.
Okay.
And we bring it into this episode, and it shows up in season two for a hot minute.
Yeah.
It's, hot being the key word.
God, yeah. Hot and cold and dangerous and just a floating conductor with Ooh. The impending lightning storm working its way. Like the fun thing about this, so this boat is moored. Well, actually, we should talk about it when we reach the yeah. boat.
We'll talk about it later. I think next boat. Episode is better to talk about the boat.
Very possibly.
Also, the Book of the White.
Yes.
Yes. The Book of the White is also directly from the books. And there's a similar conversation between Jace and Valentine, as we see in this episode, in City of Ashes, which is book two. But again, as we've seen over and over again in our series, our writers have very smartly taken key moments from the books and key plot points and sort of rearranged them and shifted them to make our plot mm-hmm. more conducive to television. And it makes it more exciting for people that know the books cover to cover.
It does. Like, I've got to do this two or three times where you make a choice as a character and nobody else is supposed to know your motivations. The audience is supposed to, like, draw their own motivations. I had to do it in Penny Dreadful. I did it at the end of Shadowhunters. And, like, I remember doing press for the finale because we were one of the very few Netflix shows yeah. that aired episodically. So it was week by week yeah. we aired. It wasn't a binge-watching show. And it was interesting because I got a lot of questions when we were doing press about, like, what are your motivations at the end of the season? And I was like, that's for me to know. I know and Miles knows.
Yeah.
But that's kind of it. Like, we and the writers obviously know, but, like, that's it. And I got to do a similar thing in Penny, which is really cool, where, like, his motives, Kurt's motives, were known to myself and to John Logan, the showrunner. And that's kind of it. And I get asked about it a lot. What were his motivations? And I'm like, mm-hmm. that's on you. The clues are there if you want to figure it out. But draw your own assumptions. Anywho, without any further ado and no more gilding
Let's
the lily, shall we jump in? Or is there anything I missed?
I don't think there's anything we missed because a lot of it, I think, is very spoilery. So we don't want to dive in too soon.
Yeah.
So we start out having just come off the shocking realization that none other than our beloved Hot Hodge Starkweather is, in fact, the traitoriest of traitors.
Bastard.
Bastard indeed.
Honestly, what was he thinking? What's wrong with you?
Well, I mean, if you've been, you know, promised your freedom after decades of being trapped in the Institute, I think all of us after the pandemic having been trapped in our houses.
It's not that bad. If he'd have stuck it out till season two, the Institute actually got really nice. It wasn't such a nightmare in season two. He wouldn't have, if we'd have left the traitor storyline season two, maybe it wouldn't have made sense because they're like, what do you mean you're trapped? This place is really nice. Like, don't worry about it. Whereas in season one, you're like, that place looks like a bit of a nightmare. I get it. But we, the Shadowhunters, do not yet know that Hodge is the traitor. Audience knows, yes. But we don't.
We do.
And Valentine knows, and maybe Jocelyn knows, because I think she can hear while she's unconscious. I can't really remember what we landed on with that. But the audience doesn't know. So what we are left with, the audience does know. We don't know.
Right.
But what we're left with is off the sort of reeling magnificence of the end of episode 11 and 12, the big drum bombs that are dropped in those episodes, blah, 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 I'll get my lines right. Jason Clary are left to talk for the first time. They have some shit to work through because they were falling in love and all of a sudden they're brother and sister and that's kind of gross.
A little awkward.
So they have to discuss it. Clary sort of drags Jace down quasi-memory lane. I say quasi because we know what happens later, but just in case you don't, stay with us.
Yeah.
Kat, tell us about what's going on here.
So we're in Clary's bedroom, and as if there wasn't enough emotional baggage to deal with, Clary's like, hey, just so you know, I know you think our mom abandoned you and threw you out like yesterday's garbage, but she didn't. And also, here's a bunch of your old baby stuff. And now they're sitting in Clary's bedroom discussing it. And as with Jace, he doesn't handle emotional situations very well. So he gets a bit cross.
Well, well, well. I think this is somewhat the exception of this. Like, he's furious. He's furious that he's been lied to. He's furious at his adopted parents because they were circle members. He's furious at his seemingly legitimate parents because he was abandoned and or raised slash tortured through the first 10 years of his life. And as he says, and I agree with him here, as he says, you know, a little box of trinkets doesn't change the fact that you weren't there. Like, oh, that's well and good that you watched over me from a distance, but like, I had to deal with all this shit on my own. Mm-hmm. Like, you weren't there. And I understand why he's angry. Also, fun little clue for the future. We saw the hair, right? There was a little like lock of hair mm-hmm. in that little lock of blonde mm-hmm. hair. It's the wrong color.
It is, isn't it?
Huh. You eagle-eyed fans. It's much more, I want to say Elizabethan, but maybe more Tudor.
Oh, yeah, I agree. I think it does have a very Tudor-esque hue.
I thought so.
To it. Hue. I wonder who might...
It has a Tudor hue.
It has a Tudor hue. Who might
honestly,
suit that?
Sometimes my genius just amazes myself. It's crazy, right?
It's
crazy. But we have to wait a whole nother half season before any of those questions / horrible clues that we just dropped get answered.
Well, our lovely angels, if we gave you all the answers right away, there would be no show. We have to leave some things.
Agreed.
So now we go look. We know the Book of the White is in Camille's possession. Mm-hmm. And as much as we all hate her, we got to talk to her. So who do we go to but our resident vampire bridge, Simon Lewis.
Simon Lewis with the answers.
Which I love that in this episode, Simon gets a chance to, you know, even Jace acknowledges the fact that he has a role to play in this. And that, you know, Simon has a chance to do something, you know?
Somewhat begrudgingly, but yeah, totally. He says something here. I can't remember what it is. I watched it earlier and it makes me laugh. He goes, you say like, oh, we're looking for the Book of the White and we found this clue and you hold the bookmark up and he goes, the bookmark of the White? And Jason in the back just goes, oh, God, I fucking hate you. But you are our only chance, so I'm going to let this go. But really made me laugh. Oh, that was really funny.
Like, I have to deal with the vampire.
Alberto's so good at it. Like, he knows that Simon riles up Jace, so he really, like, plays with it, and it's really fun to do that stuff with him. But you're right. It's a nice moment that we get to acknowledge the new status that Simon has within the Downworld. He gets to explore being, like, a dignitary, almost.
Yeah.
Like an ambassador. A Shadowhunter / vampire ambassador.
Yeah, and it's a hint at this beginning that we see of this generation being the generation of Shadowhunters and Downworlders that call into question all the ways that things have been done and the roles that have been played by everyone in the Downworld. And it's a little whisper to the future. Lots of foreshadowing in this episode. My goodness. It's like it's a season finale
or
something.
Lots of foreshadowing in this episode. That's what I was just about to say. The season finales, that's where you got to start. You got to start hooking fishies to bring them back in. You know what I mean? You got to start hooking them. And that's what we're doing.
That's what we're doing.
We're throwing lines out left, right, and center in the first act of this.
Ugh, this scene with Alec and Maris absolutely breaks my heart because Alec is really trying to reach out. And even, he just gets shut down left, right, and center.
You know what's interesting, though, is this: it's just good storytelling. Mm-hmm. Like, you need somewhere to go. And if they were both just kind of okay with it, there's no conflict. Also, like, as terrible as it is, like, this generational thing I sort of get their position there. It's not what Maris says there, which is interesting, is it doesn't matter that he's a guy.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter that he's a male. That doesn't matter to me. The sexuality of it doesn't matter to me. What matters is you're dating like this grand Lothario that everyone in the world has heard of. And I sort of get that from a mother's point of view. I sort of get this like protective, but then I guess she's not being as protective of her son as she is the name, the Lightwood name, which is a little dastardly, but I choose to think that she's trying to protect him because that's sort of where we end up with her story arc.
And I think she probably is. I just think she can't admit it yet. You know what I mean? Like there's a bit of her that she can't quite.
She just needs a little time.
Yeah. And as, you know, Robert Lightwood smartly says, which, all of our parentals become very questionable in the future. I'm just getting bits of story are coming back to me.
Oof.
But
the question is, Lydia's missing.
Yes.
Poor Lydia's gone somewhere. We, the audience, know, but fucking dumb shadow hunters don't know because we never know what's going on or where anybody is. We're constantly losing people and things and the most important items in the shadow world just go missing.
You know, no big deal.
So Alec, the hero that he is on the hunt, as it were, poor lost Lady Lydia. And he finds her not only unconscious, but missing the mortal cup, the most important of the instruments that we have slash know of. Because one of them we don't even know, right? We don't know what the mirror is.
Yet. No, we don't know what the mirror is. And the sword, I think we know it exists, but it's no one really knows.
We don't know it's an instrument.
Yeah, we don't really know where it is at this point. Like these instruments are kept under lock and key.
We do. The Silent Brothers have it.
Oh, that's right. That is the sword. So the sword is kept.
Remember because they poked you in the face in episode two?
That's right. And yeah, so we know where the sword is, but it's kept under lock and key. The cup has been missing forever, but now we have it. And now, you know, Big Bad has it. And the mirror is a bit of a legend at this point. It's no one really knows if it exists or what it actually is.
To be figured out later on in season two.
Indeed. We have Lydia uttering.
Many thanks to a graciously placed painting.
Huh. One of those fortuitous things. I love how we're all still dressed for the wedding. It's so funny. It's like we never see the Shadow Hunters stop to shower or eat or change. We do see them eat once, but not till season three.
We do. We had a breakfast scene in season three. That's right. And I think that's why they only put it in once because it was a disaster.
Yeah.
Like they kept feeding me bacon. We're going to get Drew Potter in at some point, who was our A camera operator. And I could see him like chuckling behind the camera because I had a real issue with, I was like talking and I just couldn't get bacon in my mouth. For some reason, I've been doing it for, you know, almost 30 years at this point, and I just couldn't get it in my face. So I kept missing and dropping bits, and then they'd have to come and wipe like bacon off my face. It was a whole nightmare.
We were all just a mess.
And that's probably why we didn't do very many eating scenes. Yeah.
But here we are back at the monitor. We've got Izzy on the case trying to figure out
the clickety-clack
where Valentine is and what actually happened.
Mm.
Because we know Hodge is missing, and this is where all
No, Hodge is missing.
Is
well.
Revealed.
Do we know Hodge is missing yet?
We know no one's
seen
him.
Yes, we must
do. Yeah, we know no one has seen him and we can't find
him.
There
we go.
And we did a little, I assume there's some kind of intercom.
Got it.
Where we go, you know, paging Hodge to the mission control center, paging Hodge to the control center, and he didn't show up. Right? That's how it works.
He sure didn't. I think so, yeah. I mean, it's never really been alluded to. We just sort of turn up where we're needed, but yeah.
Then we get to see, you know, badass John Corr doing his thing. Unfortunately, for nefarious reasons.
This was one of my favorite episodes with him because we got to like watch him train a couple of times, but I wasn't part of it. And then I wasn't there the day with the Forsaken either because I was off somewhere else doing a Jace thing.
Yeah.
And John came in as this like incredibly talented martial artist. And I know for a fact since then has progressed even further as a gymnast and as a martial artist. But I got to play with him for the first time in this episode, and it was like, wow, I'm really being put through my paces here. Like this guy's really talented.
But we get to touch on the Sealy ring, which we talked about last episode. We're like, wait, how did he get the ring? Oh, wait a minute. As always is the case with Valentine, nothing happens by mistake. That random Forsaken attack, not a mistake. The fact that he was so easy to take down, also not a mistake. It was all planned.
Yeah. And he wasn't even that easy. it was actually quite difficult. He leveled the challenge for the amount and the talent of Shadowhunters that was inside the Institute. And there it is. Fights Forsaken, steals a ring. Hodge, how could you, buddy? How could you? Oh, we loved you, man.
I mean, we all know from brutal. This last couple of years that you trap someone in a house for too long. We all go a little stir crazy, make decisions that we maybe regret. Who knows?
Yeah, well, there's stir crazy and then there's giving the nuclear launch codes to Hitler. You know what I mean? Like, there's a balance there. And I think Hodge stepped over the line personally. I don't know if Valentine is our Hitler. I don't know if that's a parallel we want to make here. But
I mean, not
he
no.
He gave Big Bad the big bad key.
Yeah.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health, with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid kombucha today.
Health Aid kombucha.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feelin' Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years, and not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured, not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
Mom met a lot of your demands over the years. This Mother's Day, get her the Bartesian cocktail maker that makes premium cocktails on demand. In just 30 seconds, have your choice of over 60 premium or seasonal cocktails, all at the touch of a button. Get $50 off on the Bartesian cocktail maker now when you buy one pack of cocktail capsules. So, for all the times you made a mess, get Mom the countertop cocktail system that makes premium cocktails without making any mess at all. For all the times you begged for soda, get her premium cocktail capsules made with real fruit juice and craft bitters. For all the times you demanded tacos for dinner, get her the Bartesian that mixes margaritas in just 30 seconds. Make Mom's Mother's Day and all the 364 days that aren't Mother's Day with a Bartesian cocktail maker at $50 off. Visit bartesian.com/mother now to get $50 off the Bartesian Premium Cocktail Maker. Bartesian, premium cocktails on demand.
And here we are at the boat.
Ugh, this fucking boat.
This boat, man.
So here's what we should know about the boat.
There's so much happened on this boat.
So much happens on this boat. So yeah, it must have been at the end of this season and at the beginning of season one, it was hot. So the top of this boat is like a big like irradiating.
Well, this was October.
Oh, so this was the cold day. This is when it was really cold.
This was when it was cold.
That's right.
Yeah, I remember you telling me about this because I wasn't there that day.
Yeah, it's very, very cold. But interestingly, so this shot where we come up and the boat is moored at the dock, that's how the boat always is. It's decommissioned. It doesn't sail anymore ever. So the boat is always in one place. So whenever you see that boat out in the water, it's fully CGI. They just put it out there. So the boat was a whole nightmare when you had to get 200 background on. There was literally one little staircase up the side, which you can actually see in the shot when you see the big wide of the boat. That was the only way to get on and off this boat. It was freezing cold, and it's. I was going to say parked. It's not parked. It's moored on one of the Great Lakes, Lake Ontario, which is this massive, massive, like it looks like an ocean, massive. So you are just completely at the mercy of the elements. Like, if it was raining, you're going to get rained on. If it's snowing, you're going to get snowed on. And as we find out in season two, if lightnings are coming, you just get to watch lightning are coming and you get to see it get closer and closer.
Mm-hmm. Just a bit of something I noticed. This is a giant vat of blood that Valentine has. Just sitting on the... Yeah.
Does it have to be angel blood?
I think it does. I mean...
Right?
That's a bit of a thing I never thought about. Maybe it's diluted angel blood, because that's a lot of...
It's a lot of blood. It's a lot of blood. But also, Valentine's killed a lot of Shadowhunters, so that kind of makes sense.
That's true. Yeah, I guess he could exsanguinate every person you kill.
He also says, which I think was quite fun in this scene, he says, I'm going to use this cup to purify this blood. And it goes like a yellowy color. And I'm like, I don't know if that's pure. I don't know if that's better. Like, if my Brita filter purified my water and it went yellow, I'd be like, excuse me, refund, please. This is not.
Probably time to change the filter at that point.
Yeah,
but this
I think
scene
so.
Is so, this really speaks to Alan's kind of prowess at playing just a great nuanced villain. But there's such a brutality to Valentine and such a cunning to him as a battle strategist. Because, Hodge has provided him the key that he needs, all well and good. But he owes Hodge nothing in his mind, because Hodge is found to be a traitor and known to be a traitor. So why would you want a traitor on your team if
he can
be
swayed so
easily?
Well, that's the whole thing, isn't it? They have this, like, the bad guys. I've always said in anything, and I my favorite movies with a villain are the ones where there's a part of you that kind of agrees with the villain. Like, there's sort of an element where you're like, I kind of get it. Like, it's dreadful, but I kind of get it though. And he's sort of one of them. He's like, you want to rid the world of demons and you're willing to go however far for that to be the case. And you're like, that's obviously not the way to do it. Like, that's obviously not how it should be done.
Right.
But like, isn't that what we're trying to do as Shadowhunters? We're trying to kill the demons and keep the downworld safe. Obviously, he's overstepping by getting rid of the downworld as well. But it's that tricky balance of, like, we're actually fighting for the same thing. We're just doing it at drastically different ways.
Yeah.
And that, I think, is what's so cool about this, is there's, like, there are these elements. And again, this is what reminded me about it in this scene, is, like, Hodge comes up and he's like, well, I'm going to be part of your team now. And he's like, no, you're a traitor. I don't want a traitor as part of my team. And that's how Jace would react. That's how Alec would react. Like, it's the same thing. There is a world in which you can be, rehabilitated, I guess, if you've done something wrong at some point. But if you're a traitor, you're a traitor. Like, I don't think Jace is going to trust Hodge again. You know what I mean? Like, you're a traitor. And that's kind of the end of it. So again, kind of get it.
Yeah. And Hodge has this horrible realization that he thought he'd just gotten his life back, but his life is over. There is nowhere for him to go, nowhere for him to run, nowhere for him to be safe ever.
Yeah. He pissed off everybody.
Yeah. And again, it goes back to reputation, and honor is such a big thing in the Shadow World. And once you lose that for good, which is interesting, because considering that's why I think in season four, Jace and Clary would have had such an interesting arc, because both of them had kind of, not of their own will, but had destroyed their credibility in a way.
Yeah.
And they were the only two people that understood that kind of pain and guilt and frustration with being burdened with a guilty conscience that wasn't of your own free will. And, you know, having to reprove themselves to the Shadow World. But anyway, I digress. We'll talk about that later.
Anywho, exactly. That's for later episodes. This brings us neatly to sort of the initial separation of Clary and Jace. So Jace's motivations, I was just rewatching this and I'm like, he's so upset. And I'm curious why it turned to Clary. And I'm... because he could have used her as like a confidant and whatever. And I think the two things that are in my head, I had to sort of bring myself back to where I was in that moment. The two things that were in my head were, one, I really don't even want to look at you right now. Like, I had feelings for you and that's weird. And I don't want to be around you, because that I'm still sort of dealing with that. Mm-hmm. And two, this like anger, resentment, jealousy that like you, although Valentine wasn't there, your father wasn't there, which I suppose long game, that's a good thing. But you still had your mother, your biological mother.
Yeah.
You had your sort of adopted father, you know, surrogate father in Luke. And I think there's this element of like, you really don't get it, because I was raised by the other side of that coin. You were kept away from this. I was beaten and broken into it and didn't, and then come to find out that not only were they not my parents, but they were my parents, and, you know, this whole thing. And it was, so that I think is an element of where this anger is coming from, where it's like, wow, you don't get it. And that's really frustrating. Like, you don't understand where this is. Anyway, as you mentioned, Jace doesn't deal with his emotions very well. He packs up his gear and he's going on the hunt. He's ready for blood. Mm-hmm. A handful, some might say.
Oh, you punny man, you. And this is the beginning of something else for Jace that he deals with quite a lot going forward, which is this questioning of what part of him is Valentine, and how does being Valentine's son, you know, what kind of effect does that have on who he is?
Yeah.
Maybe that is where his hot-headedness and his propensity for violence and his skill comes from, mm-hmm. but at what cost?
Yeah. That sort of ends up being the congruent through line throughout a lot of season two for Jace, is that question of like, who am I? Basically.
Oh, isn't that what we all just wonder in the end? Who am I?
Who am I?
But, you know, where do we go except we give Luke a call? Because again, I love seeing this in this episode, that we have so much to do with coming together with the downworld in this, and using the downworld and these alliances that we've formed, potentially also maybe, you know, destroying them in the process, but we'll get to that later.
We will get to that later. But that's later this episode, and then a whole bunch just throughout the rest of the show. But Luke is on board.
I also love this moment that Isaiah has where he's like, Hodge Starkweather, find him, hunt him down.
Find him.
I want him alive.
Yeah, he has this voice. He has this like presence. Isaiah does stuff sometimes on set and you're just like, and you just kind of watch it happen. Yeah. And then you're like, oh shit, I was supposed to say something or do something. I'm pretty sure didn't do it. I was just watching Isaiah over there, which is, I just messed up, whatever it was. But he does. He has these moments of like gravitas where it really does. You're just like, wow, that's awesome. That's really cool.
Yeah. You're like, oh, you're the leader of the pack. But anyway, it's so funny. I forget how much in our show, because we have so many storylines, we're constantly jumping around as things are happening concurrently. So now we have the scene where Alan goes, bye, Felicia, and
bye-bye.
sends Hodge out to pasture, as it were.
Yep.
Into the wilds of New York City.
He's in trouble.
Which brings us neatly to
the vampire deliberation. Like, Simon is kind of with Raphael, and then Izzy and Clary need something. So this sort of vampire, like, I don't even know how you put it. Like, what's a good word to describe this? Because it's not just a meeting. It's more powerful than that. Like, summit? It's like a vampire summit?
No, it's a summit with the vampires. It's I love it. I love to call this Simon the Negotiator Part 2.
Yeah.
Because we saw it earlier when Jace needed blood. Now it's happening again, much to Raphael's chagrin. But also what I love here is you get a little bit of foreshadowing of the Clary and Isabel partnership that happens throughout the series. It's sort of one of the first times we see these two team up. And it's poor Raphael. He doesn't even know what he's in for.
He doesn't know what's coming. The girls will take care of it.
Yeah, you got Sizzy and
Clizzy.
They're
so much more responsible than us. The girls, they do such a better job at shadow hunting than like Alec and I, who are constantly losing things or like dying. Oh, wait. Or not dying. Nice. Covered my ass. Well done, Dom. Good job.
Nice. Nice. Almost dying. Putting yourselves at risk of potentially dying.
That's good. That's very good. Which leads us to the scene that I was talking about earlier, and I was so excited to talk about. This fight scene with John Corr. I'm glad we got rid of the like dual lightsaber deal, because I think that looked a little, as fun as that was to train with, I think it looked a little ridiculous, but a lot of fun on the day. Hard work when you're hitting, I can't remember what these things were called that he fought with. Shurikens, maybe?
The sort of scythe.
That can't be right.
Sure.
Is it?
I don't actually know.
Oh, no. A shuriken's a throwing star.
There's sort of these.
That's wrong.
It's for those who haven't seen it, it's kind of like an axe without the handle. You sort of hold on to the middle of the axe, blade, scythe type situation.
I typed in glaive because that was in my head, but that's not it either. I don't know. Anyway, we got to film this scene in, weirdly, actually, the place where we did our first ever promo shoot for the show. We did it It's in the same place.
Oh, yeah.
Except we were here at like 4 a.m. filming this. So it was freezing cold. And John was such a trooper and he just like dove into everything. It was awesome. And we really got to have this first like master versus master fight, which was really cool. Like two people who like are the best at what they do and are very much evenly matched. Mm-hmm. And really what the reason Jace wins is he kind of breaks the rules of engagement. Like he's won, he's sort of beaten and then cuts his hand off. Brutal. Brutal, full Luke Skywalker mode. Yeah. Brutal.
Yeah. Well, it just goes to show how kind of unhinged Jace is and how much he's starting to question everything. And he's in, and it's a little terrifying because you sort of go, what is Jace willing to do in order to, you know, exact his own kind of revenge in this moment and sort of make right all of these things. I also, something I forgot is how acrobatic this fight actually is. And I mean, that's a testament to you and John, but really,
Jamie did a lot of fights like this on this. I trained and I got it correct. The big one is the backflip off the wall. I trained and I got it to a place where I was happy with it. And then we got there on the day and we've been filming for 10 hours already. And they just went, look, it's freezing cold. It's solid concrete underneath you. If something goes wrong, then the rest of the shooting day is done. I was also quite tired at that point. And I was like, fair enough. Jamie can do this one. And Jamie makes it look much more professional than I do anyway. So I was happy with it. But John, I think, did all of his stuff. I'm pretty sure this day John did all of the flips and twists and backflips and all that fun stuff. I'm pretty sure that's John.
Would not surprise me. Also, something else, that hand goes flying. And you actually see it. It's so rare in something that you see get to see.
Yeah, it actually goes nuts. So John... this was really tricky and this took some real trust on John's part. I had to be really careful with this. So he is holding the prosthetic by the wrist underneath the sleeve of his hand.
Oh, wow.
So he's holding it like this, right? Like that there. So I have this space to hit. And obviously it would be better to hit like the hand and then the hand goes flying off than it would be to hit John's hand and do some damage. But to make it look correct, you have to slice through that very, very small gap there. And I remember he would hold it as still as he could. And I would just sort of almost like a golfer, like I would line up this perfect swing to go through and then get to that point. And then as soon as I'm through, then it's like the performance comes back. And I get to like act into it again. But that the whole until I've hit it, I'm just like, don't cut off John's fingers. Don't cut off John's cut off the fake fingers. As attached to a fake hand. Yeah. Don't touch the real hand, even though that's attached to the fake hand. Just do just straight line, Dom. That's all you got to do. And that's what we did. And I think we did it twice. And the first one, I was too a scaredy. And I think I hit the top of the fingers of the fake hand and it just didn't look right. It looked like the hand just tumbles off. And then I think the second one or the third one, we got this and we were like, that's the one. Let's not do it again. Let's not risk anyone's fingers. Because as we find out, actually, these ones weren't as bad. They still hurt when you got hit. But like season two, when you got hit in the fingers, that was rough. I loved those swords.
That was split knuckle city.
Yeah. Split knuckles, couple fractured bones every now and then. Brutal. Loved them.
Occupational hazard. A little known fact that I don't know if you remember, Dom. I was not on set for the majority of this day, but this was actually Matt Daddario's birthday.
Oh.
And this was the day that, I don't know if you remember, we all snuck onto set and snuck into Matt's trailer and decorated it.
I do remember that.
Sang him happy birthday and sent him a video because he wasn't. Do you remember that? Because he wasn't in his trailer on lunch and we were all going to surprise him, but he was somewhere else. So we just had to make him a video. Which then ended up somewhere on social media.
Is that the one where you all pretended to be dead in his trailer as well and you couldn't get it right? Everyone started laughing.
Yeah.
Or asleep maybe.
We were just trying to be, you know, as
fun times,
you know, straight as Matt Daddario himself, but we couldn't hack it.
Only Matt can do that. It's a real talent.
We can't do the deadpan Matt.
We can't. So the end of this scene leads to a handless, arrested Hodge and a still fairly single-minded Jace using said hand from now handless Hodge. He finds himself a Sealy ring, a Sealy communications ring, which can only communicate to the other ring, right? So he knows who he's calling. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So with this ring, he finds himself face to face once again, not quite in the flesh, but close to Valentine.
True, a la Star Wars
with
fashion.
A somewhat morbid foreshadowing promises that I am coming for you. And I'm going to make you regret the choices that you've made. Mm-hmm.
And what's interesting about this as well, a little bit of mythology, is that no one else can hear Valentine in this moment. Only the possessor of the ring.
Just my
side,
right?
They can hear your side, but I have a feeling you're keeping it rather hush-hush. And, you know, they're dealing with...
Yeah, well, TV hush-hush, yes. Like 3 or 4 paces away, complete silence.
Oh, yeah, completely. There's no Shadow Hunter TV, hush, expert hush. Hearing rune, and werewolf ears are not a thing at this moment.
Yeah, no, not until we use them for the first time, we write them into the canon. That so far, werewolf hearing is canonless. Mm-hmm. It's not part of our canon. It's not part of our story as of yet.
Not yet.
Is it? No, we haven't used it in season 1.
Now we have Isabel the Distractor at her finest.
Isabel being distracting. Yes. As the Isabel that we first met in episode 1, she does a wonderful job distracting any warm-blooded creature couldn't help but stop and stare, but apparently not just warm-blooded creatures, because Raphael catches himself being a little allured by the lovely Izzy. Mm,
another little bit of foreshadowing, isn't it?
Mm. I know. Wow, we really did drop them all in this episode, didn't we?
Well done, Pete Binswanger.
Well done, Pete.
There's 2 kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health, with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid kombucha today.
Health Aid kombucha.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feelin' Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured, not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
Mother's Day is coming, and Mom doesn't want flowers. She wants a cocktail. Here's a hint. Get Mom Bartesian. It's the countertop cocktail maker that creates your choice of over 60 premium cocktails in less than 30 seconds, each at the touch of a button. Flowers die. Happy hour comes back every day. So get Mom the machine that makes amazing cocktails with real fruit juices and craft bitters. Best of all, get $50 off a Bartesian premium cocktail maker with the purchase of 1 pack of cocktail capsules. So, instead of getting Mom a reason to fill a flower vase with water, get Mom the easiest, fastest way to fill her glass with the floral notes of gin. The best cocktails are premium cocktails, and the best day to get it for Mom is Mother's Day, because you can get $50 off now for a limited time. Visit bartesian.com/mother to get the best premium cocktail maker for Mom at the best price for you. Bartesian, premium cocktails on demand.
Oh, I have to talk. Okay, now we have Simon pushing a coffin through the Hotel de Mort. I got to talk about this coffin for a minute. I'm sure you've been, your vampire days, you've been in a coffin or two. I had never been inside a coffin before, and I was curious, nervous, wondering what it was going to be like. I was fine, completely fine with all of it, until I accidentally shut my eyes once before they closed the lid. So then I opened my eyes and I was shut in the coffin. Mm. And for some reason, not seeing the lid close made all the difference. And the sound inside of the coffin, because it's all padded, right? So you just feel enclosed mm-hmm. and a little bit underwater. And it's not great. I'll put it that way. I'm not thinking.
No, I don't like it as a concept.
I'm not thinking that that's where I want to end up, you know, eventually.
Nope.
Not my choice.
No, it's such an irrational fear because the concept of it happening is so slim. Yeah. But being buried alive is a real fear. Like, that's a real, like, I have that nightmare at least once a year. I have the nightmare and I wake up with the sweats of like, I'm good. I can get out.
Yeah.
Everything's fine. Like, what I remember once I had that nightmare and I woke up with my sheets like over my head
mm-hmm.
and the panic, like full script, like, ah! Ah! And then the sheets came off and I was like, I'm fine. I'm good. I'm fine. But a little bit of wee came out. And that's going to be the promo for this episode. I can almost guarantee it.
Yeah, probably is. But
this, oh God. So this takes us. So Raphael slips Izzy's clutches on his way to stop the impending doom of Clary and Simon,
mm-hmm.
which leads us to Alec and Luke. Which again is, this is what we keep talking about on this show and what we used to talk about as actors when we were in the show. Fucking hell, the Shadowhunters are useless. He literally comes over to Luke to say, we just got to keep our eyes on Jace. There's something wrong with Jace. We just got to keep our eyes on him no matter what and make sure that he's good. Turn around Scooby-Doo style and they're like, huh, where did they go? They appear to have disappeared. Useless, completely useless. Jace does it all the time as well. Completely useless, honestly. But it works for the story. So you know what? I'm into it.
Yep.
I'm into it. I buy it.
And now we're back to Simon and Clary about to unleash Camille. Interestingly, this was the last scene that Alberto, this was the last scene that was shot in season one. Alberto and I jumped in a car.
You came from this to New York.
We met you all at the airport to fly to New York Comic Con right after shooting this scene.
Wow.
But interestingly enough, there she is, Camille herself. Whoa, all right, calm down. You know, they say people wake up cranky sometimes, but this is a whole
screamy,
other level.
Screamy, screamy Camille.
Yeah.
That, honestly, I just watched this and it scared. I knew it was happening, but I think I was like looking away or whatever. And I looked up just as she came up and it scared the shit out of me because I forgot that it was quite so like directly into camera. It was so drastic.
Yeah.
So you guys chat about, listen, lady, give us the book. That's enough out of you. Just give us the book. And she says, no, take me with you. Not like that. That's why I didn't get this role when I auditioned for Camille.
Oh, I see.
Because that's how I did it. No, take me with you.
I think you were better suited to Dreadful. Jace.
I think so too.
Something interesting about this is we get into the concept of the vampire sire situation, which we don't play into a lot until season 2B, I believe, when certain other characters enter the story who we come to love
mm-hmm.
verily. As humans.
Yes. Not as a character, but as a person.
Not as a character as much, but as a person, absolutely. But it's this concept of whatever vampire mm-hmm. turns a creature, a human, into a vampire, they are that new fledgling vampire is drawn back to their and linked forever to that other vampire, which it's another nail in the coffin, for lack of a better pun, for Simon, that he is forever linked to Camille.
Good job.
In the same way, sort of paralleling Jason Clary forever being linked to Valentine.
For now. Also John Corr. What an absolute legend. So I can't remember what happened this day. We find Jace and Hodge in what looks like an abandoned warehouse because it is in fact an abandoned warehouse. This is Studio 1B before it was Studio 1B. It was just a storage room for like metallic equipment next to our studio. And come season two, we bought it and turned it into the Hunter's Moon and Jade Wolf and a whole bunch of other stuff, which is mm-hmm. great. But this day, and I can't remember what happened, but they came to me this day and they went, hey man, something's changed. We're going to film this scene today. And I was like, what do you mean? Because, you know, we prep, like we put work into these ahead of time and this was scheduled for sort of a week later or whatever. And in my head, I was selfishly thinking about me. And what I should have been thinking about is like, poor John Corr is about to do a scene where he's getting tortured. You're just going to throw this at him? And he threw himself into it so thoroughly. His stump, for lack of a better word, that prosthetic hadn't been made yet. So they just folded up some like paper around his arm and drew blood on it. And that is what this is. Like, it's not the prosthetic. That's how quickly we rolled into this scene.
No way.
And John just does such an amazing job. He's this like powerhouse performer. Yeah. And he does this incredible job. But what's interesting is it has come from nowhere. Like, there's no prep that went into this. There's no, like, even just like when you're acting, you sort of put yourself in the mindset of like, I have a light scene coming up, or like, this is a love scene, romance, that's what I have to do. Or like, this is a fight scene, get into that place. Or like, this is a death scene, get into that place. You just sort of put your mindset from the beginning of the day roughly where you're going to be. Mm-hmm. And he had to pull this out of his ass. And I think he does an amazing job pulling this golden performance out of his bottom.
Indeed. But, you know, that's par for the course with John Corr.
Leaving us with the location of Valentine.
But I have a feeling that Valentine doesn't want to say.
Looks like it takes us back to sneaky Simon looking through his little cross-shaped window, not to be taken any further than 20 feet before he is stopped by Raphael. The question then is, who could possibly save the day? Somebody, surely.
Q, Isabel Lightwood.
Oh no, she doesn't shoot arrows.
So whoop-pah!
What she does.
Whoop-pah!
But it's a podcast, so nobody saw me do that. It's a whoop. Oh yeah, whoop-ah! That's what she does.
A little Friends reference out there.
This is like a massive air blast of the wall as well. Is that what they
did?
Yeah,
they did. So the wall, I believe it was, they had changed out some bricks for foam bricks. Sort of, I think it was actually, you know, in flower arrangements when you have that green stuff at the bottom that's like the really thick foam?
Yeah, yeah.
I believe it was that. Mm-hmm. And then I don't exactly know how they did it with practical effects, but they blew the wall up basically, but safely.
Amazing.
And then, you
so
know,
fun.
Through the wall, walks the sexy Isabel Lightwood in true glamorous, graceful fashion.
There she is.
Bringing
the daylight with her, which seems to take... Wait, wasn't it just nighttime where Jace was? We can say it was dawn. We can say it was dawn. The coming of dawn.
Sure, let's call
little
it
time
dawn.
Cut.
Let's call it dawn.
We'll call it dawn.
But that it's interesting because that does answer our question from last episode about the daylight and the vampires in our world. Because it would not be the ambient daylight then that gets them. They would have to be in a direct beam of light.
Mm. Yeah.
In order for it to
affect
them.
Yeah, that's a good
point. Because this light comes in, but it kind of cuts a separation, allowing our heroes and slightly questionable villain type to get away.
That does answer our question. Very good. Taking us to a little walk and talk in a hallway that we have used before and I'm sure we'll use again. Episode 5, we used this in when we were escaping the police station. We were underground. It's our little walk and talk hallway.
Seven.
But was it seven? But we went the other way.
So.
We were walking the other way. So they're very, it could be a completely different
completely
hallway
different
for
place.
All we
know. Oh yeah.
Because yeah, it brilliant. Brilliant. What wonderful stuff. Which takes us to Magnus's apartment. Camille, Magnus, Simon, Clary, and Izzy are all in Magnus's apartment. And I can't remember why.
Well, because we have to find the Book of the White. So we're questioning Camille.
She must have said something.
I think she does. I think she does say, like, I need to see Magnus Bane. And we're like, all right, fine. What other errands do you need to run, Camille? Do you need, like,
honestly,
you know,
any excuse.
Yeah.
Any excuse to go and see the wonderful Magnus Bane. We're like, let's do it.
It's true.
Let's do it. Sounds great. He is another one. It's so interesting that we don't just, anytime we need to go somewhere or do something, we're not just like, hey, Magnus, you're literally all powerful. Can you just do this thing for us, please?
Yeah.
Like anytime we needed to like find something or like destroy something, like we never just went like, hey, man, would you mind just sort of giving us a hand
portal
here?
Somewhere.
We just didn't really use it.
You know, yeah. But that brings us to a really lovely, because this is what it is. Because Camille demands from Simon a writ of transmutation in order to help us.
That's right.
And that's a big thing.
The
writ of transmutation, basically because Camille broke the accords by transforming Simon into a vampire, she is now... This writ of transmutation exonerates her. And basically Simon is literally signing his soul away and saying, I asked Camille to turn me into a vampire. Mm-hmm. And so it takes away any bargaining power that Simon has. And it also, you know, forces him to sort of claim this as something he wanted, which is not, it's not easy to do, nor is it right in any sense of the word. But as we see time and time again, Simon, being the hero that he is, chooses to take it on for Jocelyn, for his mom, and for the rest of the Shadow World. You know, we see a little glimpse of short, redheaded, bad-tempered Frey going, yeah, I'll hold her down if you want to stake her. It's fine. Let's do it. But, you know, Simon does the right thing once again.
Sounds about right. Alec turns up, poorly timed, bless him, just in time for tricksy, mischievous Camille to start pulling at some heartstrings there, to start leaving some threads of cliffhangers, some cliffs to be hung on. She starts leaving them by slapping a big old kiss on her ex-boyfriend, Magnus Bane. Brutal. Right in front of his current boyfriend, Alec Lightwood. Unacceptable, Camille.
You have some really poorly timed kisses in this show. You know, it's just so the timing, or well-timed, so many, depending on how you look at it.
Or yeah, well, that's the thing. It really does depend on your sort of position there. Mm-hmm. All about perspective.
But there's something about this... these ancient beings and these downworlders that have existed for hundreds and hundreds of years and have this immortality, there's a gravitas to them, but as well as a frivolity to some of their decisions because they do have all the time in the world.
It's a mischief.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, it's a real mischief because who cares? Like, if I make this mistake, it doesn't really matter because I'm going to live forever. Literally, by definition, if you're going to live forever, for an entire eternity, you're going to make every mistake because it's eternal. Like, eventually you're going to make all the mistakes. So just get this one out of the way. I sort of get this, like, this weird capacity for immortality where you're like, it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. Literally nothing matters. Yeah. It doesn't matter. And it makes sort of all of the immortals, Camille, Magnus, the Sealy Queen, it makes them all quite tricksy.
Yeah.
It makes them all quite sort of mischievous is really the best word for it. And Magnus is really the only one that we're like, we like your mischief. You're quite good fun. We like you. You're well-meaning. You're good-hearted. You care about other people. The others are really just like mischief for mischief's sake and will take advantage of us lowly mortals along the way.
Which, speaking of lowly mortals, you have... It's actually, it's nice to start to see this transition, even as short-lived as it is, in Alec and Clary's relationship. It's, you get to see why they butt heads, because they both have the same want to, you know, love and protect Jace, but go about it in very different ways. And this is one of a few instances where we actually get to see them on the same page of going, oh no, Jace is on the war path. We got to find him. We got to stop him before he makes a bigger mistake than he is aware of.
Totally. Totally. Speaking of Jace making mistakes, the handless, stumbling Hodge is dragged to where we think the boat is. It's now daytime.
There we go.
I'm assuming it was dawn when we got him.
Yeah.
Only to find no ship, no Valentine, and throws Hodge against a shipping container. Was it necessary?
Yes.
We all think so. So the plans have been crisscrossed at this point. Jace was on the warpath. He was going to turn up at Valentine and do whatever it takes to stop this man from doing what he's doing. Unfortunately, Valentine's cottoned on to Jace's plan, disappeared, and is going after his friends.
Because in
panic,
true
run.
Yeah, in true bad
this,
guy fashion.
I have
fashion.
A fun story about this, right?
Okay.
So, in true bad guy fashion. So, Kinsey, Alex Kinsey, who wrote the music for this and is an incredible musician, you should check it out wherever
Kinsey.
You are, was here this day. He was here when we filmed this and watched take after take of me sprinting as fast as I could to get to where we were going. And finally, they say, yeah, we're done with that scene. We're going to move on. And Alex goes, you're done with that scene, right? And I go, yeah, man. And he goes, oh, okay, good. Because you kind of make a funny running face. And I was like, what? He's like, you make a funny running face. Like, it's not a big deal, but you make a funny face when you run. I just didn't want to tell you and put you off, like, whilst you were doing it. But, like, I was laughing about it. And I was like, wow, okay. And as soon as he finished saying that, Miles from behind me, and I think Pierre from behind me, go, hey, man, we just need you to do one more. And I'm like, oh, no. Now I'm fully in my head. And I see Kinsey, like, sink. He's like, oh no, this is so embarrassing. And I did another take of it, and I'm very obviously like not like intentionally not trying to pull a face as I'm running. And they were like, that everyone was sort of like, that was really weird. We're not going to use that. And I think all of the running got cut out of the show because of this. Super embarrassing. Super, super embarrassing. But there you go.
It happens to the best. At least you didn't trip. You know, I've had several of those where I just fall. Or, you know,
not yet. Not running. No.
Not yet.
Paris, actually. I had a little trip in Paris, but not onto my face.
Well, there you go.
But it's a fun transition from like, sprinting, badass, going to be the hero to like, oh, Dom, I just stumbled and I look like a moron.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health, with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid kombucha today.
Health Aid kombucha.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feelin' Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured, not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
Mother's Day is coming, and Mom doesn't want flowers. She wants a cocktail. Here's a hint. Get Mom Bartesian. It's the countertop cocktail maker that creates your choice of over 60 premium cocktails in less than 30 seconds, each at the touch of a button. Flowers die. Happy hour comes back every day. So get Mom the machine that makes amazing cocktails with real fruit juices and craft bitters. Best of all, get $50 off a Bartesian premium cocktail maker with the purchase of one pack of cocktail capsules. So, instead of getting Mom a reason to fill a flower vase with water, get Mom the easiest, fastest way to fill her glass with the floral notes of gin. The best cocktails are premium cocktails, and the best day to get it for Mom is Mother's Day, because you can get $50 off now for a limited time. Visit bartesian.com/mother to get the best premium cocktail maker for Mom at the best price for you. Bartesian, premium cocktails on demand.
This moves us quite neatly onto the stage, whether it's this room or another room, the stage for sort of the finale of what's about to happen for our season one. And it's interesting, you know, when you film stuff like this, we don't know if we're getting a season two. Sometimes shows are very lucky and they get told ahead of time that they're going to get another season, which I think actually we were told season two to season three. That we have been picked up, were we not?
Yeah, we got told season two to season three that we did, right? Yeah, we got told on set, which was nice because then we were able to sort of plan our lives and have a bit of assurance going into our break. Mm-hmm. But this time we didn't know for
exactly
6 months, 8 months, something like that.
6 months.
Yeah.
6 months to the, no, it was 6 months. And I know why it was 6 months, because it was, that was the contractual stipulation.
That's right.
So they, when you join a show, they have you for a certain amount of time. You know, you sign a contract for 6 years, 7 years, whatever it is. So if they want to continue making the show contractually, you're obliged to go and continue making the show. An absolute dream come true for an actor. So it's not a big deal. You know, you sign away your life. That's totally fine. In between seasons, part of your contract says they have a certain amount of time to tell you that you're coming back or not coming back. And after that amount of time, the contract is then null and void. And either if they wanted you back, you'd have to re-sign another contract and renegotiate, or you're done with the show and you contractually do not have to come back.
Yeah.
They, I think to the week, took their full 6 months to tell us, because the contractual stipulation was 6 months. Yeah. And I think it was to the week, because I was in London. Between us, I was in London auditioning. Like I was, yeah. I was
between
going
us and
out
the podcast
for other stuff, because I was like, it's been 5.5 months and the podcast audience, exactly. But like, it's been 5.5 months. Yeah. Like, it's not looking great. Let's just leave it. But they, you know, told us later on that they had had this plan forever. But anyway, I digress. When you film scenes like this, you don't know if this is you telling the last thing that's going to happen in this story. Like, we don't know.
Yeah.
We have no idea. So in theory with us, this is like, we're saying this as Jason Clary's final goodbye. And it's a weird place where you're in, because you want to and you hope that this is going to be the case, mm-hmm. that you're going to continue. But you just don't know.
Yeah.
Like, you just have no idea.
Yeah.
During this scene, Clary and Simon very cleverly find the Book of the White.
Indeed.
Disguised quite wonderfully as a cookbook.
Another callback to the books.
Oh, it is.
It is. The chicken cacciatore is a big thing in the books. It's Simon's favorite recipe that Jocelyn makes, and Clary makes it later. And it's sort of a thing that they share as a reminder of where they came from. And, you know, especially considering that Simon's mm-hmm. human for a lot longer in the books, they get to live it out a little bit longer.
Yeah.
But it's interesting.
It's not much use to him now.
Yeah. I also wonder if this is a sort of another iteration of Jocelyn and Clary's shared power of disguising things in drawings. Whether this was sort of a or just a regular glamour, I'm not sure. But it's another sort of shadow huntery wink and a nod to Dot, who we miss very dearly.
Mm-hmm. Valentine shows up.
Yep.
Bad news bears. It's not great. Valentine shows up with his cronies. He has everyone held, tied up, swords to the throat.
Yep.
I'm actually pretty sure, which I think is really clever, they have Magnus's hands tied. Because the question, again, like we were talking about earlier, is like, why doesn't Magnus just snap his fingers and do something? But his magic is tied to these motions that he does, mm-hmm. you know? And they have his hands locked. So he can't move his hands to do what he needs to do with, you know, the magic thing that he does. Which I thought was a clever little like, oh, we've sort of taken care of that question there,
yeah.
which is good. Valentine gives Jace a choice. Come with me. Be the lieutenant in my new The World is Going to End army, or lose your friends.
Not really much of a choice there.
It's not much of a choice.
Yeah.
In my head, again, it's one of those things that we never really discussed and told to the audience, but the show's over now, so I'm going to tell you. Exclusive! The question was always, did Jace leave because there's a part of him that knows he is Valentine's son and that's where he belongs?
Mm-hmm.
Which is there that thought is in the back of his head. Or did Jace leave because he knows he can be the spy now, completely exonerated in Valentine's eyes, and get the cup back? Those were the two things going through Jace's head. And the way I thought about it when I was him, when I was stood there in that room and I was looking at my father and I was looking at my best friends and the woman I love, it was 70-30
yeah.
in my head. 70% I'm going to take the cup. I'm going to kill this man. This threat is going to be over. My friends are going to be safe. The human world is going to be safe. The down world is going to be safe. And 30%, I wonder if this darkness, if this anger, if this emotional fragility, I wonder if the answers lie with him. I wonder if I'm going to have these questions that I've had for the large portion of my life answered
yeah.
by this man. So there it is. 70-30. That was his motivations. Either way, he says a semi-tearful goodbye, or maybe hasta mañana, hasta luego.
Maybe.
Too
long for now.
His friends, to his family, and leaves with the big bad Valentine.
And this is, there's another, again, so many nods in this. A lovely nod to the Parabatai relationship. And Alec, you know, Jace knows Alec and knows enough to go, I mean it, don't try. And
yeah,
what is
don't,
so,
yeah.
And what is so
well,
lovely.
Because he would yeah. sense that motion. he, like, Alec has made the decision, like, you have to pre-think about whatever it is you're going to do. Mm-hmm. And, you know, right before his synapses fire in his legs, his fast twitch muscle fibers, they're ready to go. And right before they fire, Jace senses it and goes, no, seriously, don't.
Yeah.
Don't. I mean it. Because he knows that that's what's about to happen.
Yeah. And what's lovely about that is Alec takes it even a step further and takes over for Jace in a way as the leader of this group, but also as Clary's protector. Because he then knows that, okay, mm-hmm. Jace wants Clary to be safe, wants her taken care of. She's going to need someone now that she doesn't have Jace. And he also knows that she's going to go running after him with reckless abandon because that's what Clary does. And he literally catches her from jumping into limbo, from diving into, you know, unknown realms of
nothingness. Eternal nothingness. Yeah.
And it's such a lovely turn where Alec has pushed her away for so long. And for Jace and for this, you know, this relationship that he doesn't ever know if he'll see his Parabatai again, he's taking over and taking care of what is his as well. And that's, it's a really beautiful moment that we, you know, we don't see that sort of, that side of Alec a lot.
Mm-mm.
And again, who's the first person to rush to Clary? It's Simon.
Quite lovely.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're back at the Institute. Yeah. Jace is gone. Nobody knows where. I know where because I played him and I was there. So I know where he's gone. But nobody else knows at this moment. We're back at the Institute.
Hodge gets carted
in
off.
In theory, with all of the tools we need. Yeah, poor Hodge. We'll see him again later. Mm-hmm. Wink. With all the tools we need to wake up the lovely Jocelyn.
Indeed.
To wake up Mama Fairchild.
And first, though, we have a lovely little, lovely but heartbreaking Simon and Clary moment where, you know, Clary's consoled Simon so many times, and now we get this role reversal where Simon actually is the one who knows his place in this world, and Simon is the one who's on sure footing and shoots a shot in a way and says, I've got you. We're going to do this. And then we have an exchange of I love yous, which, again, this is something that, you know, I thought about a lot because obviously Clary knows a bit of how Simon feels about her. She's aware, but isn't necessarily in a place where she can go there.
Mm-hmm.
But she needs a friend. And I think the I love you in this sense is can be taken a lot of ways, but it's you're my family. You are my rock. You are the one thing in this world that I'm sure of. So I love you. But it begs the question because she did invite him to the wedding and there's a part of her that goes, okay, I thought I knew what love was. I thought I knew what these emotions were. But if I thought that was Jace and Jace is my brother, maybe I was wrong about what love is. And maybe that's
thank God
else.
That didn't go on in the show as long as it went on in the books is all I'll say. I know. Here we are. Finally, after 11, 12 motherless episodes of Shadowhunters, finally, through the magic blue sparkly fingers of the wonderful Magnus Bane, we are about to welcome back Jocelyn Fairchild to the world of the living.
Out of the green bubble of Ragnarfell.
Finally. Kat, why don't you tell us about this scene? I don't know if I'm even there.
You're not. You are on a boat with Daddy Valentine. So what we have here, we have the family.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. We're just talking
about have that. The family assembled. We have magical warlock godfather Magnus Bane rousing Jocelyn from her coma. And again, in a moment of gravitas, Luke catching her before she falls to the floor from her magical bubble. And we see this moment, the family reunited. And it's actually a really lovely moment. You know, there's when Jocelyn wakes up in the books, their reunion is not quite as sweet. They actually kind of go head to head almost immediately. But in this moment, Clary's been through a lot. Jocelyn immediately apologizes. And there's a moment of, not now. We'll talk about this later. I don't want to talk about the shadow world. I don't want to talk about family or Jace or anything. I just need a hug. I just need my mom.
Just need my mom. Just need a hug from my mom. Neutral, just need a hug. Please hug me. Quick note to arguably the scene stealer from this. Fucking Isaiah's arms, the size of them. Good Lord, honestly. Know. Like, he picks up Jocelyn and like it's nothing.
Yeah.
Like it's nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Just like picking up a tray of mimosas. Why that came to my head, I don't know, but that was the first thing that was easy to carry that came to my head.
You think a tray of mimosas is easy to carry?
Oh, yeah. When you've had as much practice as me, I do it blindfolded.
All right, you got to teach me because I do not have those skills.
Placement is key. Right. Many years as a waiter, many dropped mimosas.
All right, Peter Parker. which, speaking of cups and important, precious liquids, brings us to the final scene in season one.
Yeah.
Do you want to tell us about this one, Dom?
Yeah, lots of questions. Lots of questions. We leave you with lots of questions. Somewhere, where were we? New York? So heading into the
Hudson River?
Atlantic Ocean?
Atlantic, yes.
Somewhere heading out into the Atlantic Ocean is Valentine, stood in front of a fully raised Shadowhunter army, ready to do his bidding, asking them to join him.
He's just a man
with his son
standing in front of an army
with Jace,
asking them to join him
with a very, very motivationally questionable Jace at this moment. Join me and my son as this army on a floating op center, unbeknownst to anyone else in the shadow world, sails off into the distance, leaving us on one of the biggest cliffhangers we ever had on the show. And that is the end of season one. That is it. That was the end of season one. Whew. Wow, can you imagine if we didn't come back? That would have been brutal.
Yeah.
Brutal if that's how we ended it. But unbelievable. Truly— also, I do just want a quick nod. Credit to the 200 background supporting artist extras, however you refer to them in your country. It was freezing ass cold this day. Like freezing, freezing cold. And Alan and I had a little space inside and we were good and we could just, you know, nip into the warm and nip back out. But these guys were pretty much out there all night. So every single one of you, if any of you are listening, thank you so much for being troopers. You did an amazing job and the show wouldn't have been the same without you.
It's not an easy job and it's often a thankless job and it adds so much to the world. And I mean, as we've seen also, you know, in this period of COVID, folks may not, folks at home may not know, numbers of people on set have had to be controlled a bit more because it's not, you know, there have been times during the pandemic where it hasn't been safe to have large numbers of people in enclosed spaces. So sets have had to get really creative with background essays, whatever you call them in your country, as it were, by not having as many. And it really does change how you can tell a story and the sort of effect that you can have visually. And it, you know, moments like this where you look and you see, as you said, 200 extras on a boat in the middle of the water wouldn't be possible in the last couple of years. And it really does make a huge difference. So thank you.
I completely agree.
Essays of Toronto. Yeah.
With that actually wonderful note, with some of the unsung heroes of Torontonian film and TV making, we're going to say goodbye to season one.
Wow.
That's it. We've made it all the way through season one. And next up, we've got longer hair, different swords, different color hair for you, different colored runes. We've got a whole bunch of changes just kind of right from the off in season two. We get darker and edgier. The words that we said over and over and over when we were doing the press tour for season two, darker and edgier, bloodier. And we dive right into some crazy, crazy action.
Yeah.
Quite literally from the off. We got doppelgangers. We got vampires.
We got new stunt coordinators.
The amazing Dean Kopkoff, who's going to get a nod. New stunt coordinators. We got all of these different amazing things. But for now, you're going to have to wait. And I'm sorry about that.
That's true.
But as always, thank you so much for listening. Thank you for being a part of our journey. Thank you for coming along with us. I hope you enjoyed season one. I hope you enjoyed us reminiscing about season one and talking about season one. If you have any questions or thoughts about season one, open line of communication, you know, hit us up. We will
Send
try and answer
questions.
Or get to, or at least think about as many as we possibly can. But for now, we're going to say goodbye and we love you. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for joining us. We love you, angels, and hope you've enjoyed going down memory lane and back into the fray as much as we have. See you next season.
Thank you for returning to the shadows.
Return to the Shadows is hosted and executive produced by Catherine McNamara and Dominic Sherwood. Our executive producer is Ling Lee. Our senior producers are Liz Hayes and Diego Tapia, and our producers are Hannah Harris and Kristen Vermilia. Original music by Alex Kinsey and performed by Alex Kinsey and Catherine McNamara.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, Berry Lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like Eco Eye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.